This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It is good to be back May 1st, baby. And we are talking some college football. And I will make the same vow that I made to you last summer. Hopefully, we will have an episode, at least one, in your feed every week from here on out until the football season gets rolling. I'm Tim Murray, your host, joined today by Emmanuel here all throughout the college football season, and I'm sure plenty of times over the summer months as he will be putting in the hard work to get us ready for college football season, in addition to his baseball breakdowns, the one and only Adam Burke. Mr. Burke, happy post-spring portal season to you, sir.
Hey, what's up, buddy? Good to be back on the show here, but I got to say, man, you know, when you reached out and texted me about doing another podcast and getting something back into the feed here, I realized how much catch up I have to do because of just how absurd the transfer portal has gotten. Like the exercise that we're going to do today that you sent me that you wanted to talk about, it took me way more time than it probably should have to come up with some of these names. So it's going to be fun, that learning curve of getting back into the college football season with new faces and new places all over the place.
Well, I appreciate all of you who have chimed in, curious when we will get rolling back up on the feed. And hopefully, like I said, we will continue to do it all throughout the summer months. I'm with you. Still need a lot of homework to do. I thought today would be a good kind of, you know, if you remember back to college, it was syllabus day, the first day of classes. It was great. You know, you walked in there, you met your professor, you were there for 10 minutes and you were in and out. We'll be in here for a little bit longer than 10 minutes, but appreciate Jason tweeting us and asking when the first podcast would drop. And here you go, Jason, this is your selection. So I wanted to do two things today, Adam, and we're going to focus on quarterbacks. The first exercise is just a refresher of where we're at from a quarterback movement standpoint. Because you think back to last year, the national championship, we had two transfer portal quarterbacks starting in that game, right? Will Howard for Ohio State, Riley Leonard for Notre Dame. The number one team in the country all year long, the Oregon Ducks, they had a transfer portal quarterback. And when you look at the odds board right now for the Heisman, you don't see that many portal quarterbacks. Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier, Drew Aller, Cade Klubnik, Julian Sayin. I don't consider Dante Moore a portal quarterback because he was at Oregon a year ago. You have to go to Carson Beck at 22-1 on the DraftKings board at number 9 for your first portal quarterback. And then after that, you see John Mateer at Oklahoma. So we're going to rank our quarterbacks on the other side of the first break, Adam. But I just wanted to run through the Power Four new faces, because initially I was like, well, it's not that many. But then I did the exercise yesterday. I'm like, wow, there still are a lot of movement, but more of the, you know, fringe-ish type of teams. And not all of these guys are necessarily going to be the starter. So feel free to jump in wherever you feel fit. But we're just going to kind of run through it Power Four style here. And looking in the ACC, and I went alphabetically here, Adam, Boston College got Dylan Lonergan, the transfer from Alabama. However, it doesn't seem like Lonergan is necessarily going to be the guy. Grayson James started a handful of games a year ago for Thomas Castellanos, who has moved on to Florida State. Continue to go down. Cal's got an interesting situation where Devin Brown, the Ohio State transfer, who it felt like, and you could speak to this better than I can, it felt like for how many years Devin Brown, oh, maybe he'll be the starter. Maybe he won't. He's wearing a stupid number, but maybe he'll still be the starter. And then they've got the transfer from Oregon, who actually is a true freshman. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. Jaron Kiwi Sagapuleti? I don't know, from Hawaii. But I'll stop there. Cal, Devin Brown, from what you recall from him at Ohio State, do you expect him to be a quality Power Four starter?
Well, it's certainly a lower stress environment to be the starting quarterback at Cal, or at least, you know, be somewhere on the depth chart at Cal. It was always an interesting thing at Ohio State because like even in mop-up games, it felt like they didn't really want him throwing the football a whole lot. A lot of handoffs, a lot of super easy throws out into space. Maybe they just didn't want to embarrass teams. I don't know. But it did feel like throughout the majority of this past college football season, and we did see Will Howard run a little bit more as the college football playoff went along. But man, it felt like they were so deathly afraid of Will Howard running the football because they didn't want to have him get hurt and have him go down. Of course, we saw that, you know, in the Michigan game where he had the concussion and he was all, you know, I think he was concussed. He looked terrible in that game, but they wanted no part of playing Devin Brown at any point in time. So I don't know. I mean, he gets a clean slate here. I don't know if he was actually good, but he certainly wasn't up to Ohio State standards based on how the coaching staff handled him.
Yeah, and Cal certainly in the spring portal got hit pretty hard with Jaden Ott leaving. He goes to Oklahoma. So the late portal, not ideal for them from that standpoint. So we'll see how it all plays out there for the Cal Golden Bears, who pretty interesting coaching staff being formed there for Justin Wilcox. They went out, they got Brian Harsin. He's going to be their offensive coordinator. I believe Nick Rolovich is on their coaching staff. So Cal's going to be kind of interesting from that standpoint. I'll run through the rest of the ACC, and then we can kind of just sum it up who interests you there. So Duke gets Darian Mensa, big-time addition for them. They say goodbye to Malik Murphy, who won't be on this list because he transferred to Oregon State. But Darian Mensa, the Tulane transfer, goes to Duke. Florida State, as mentioned already, Thomas Castellanos from Boston College. Louisville gets Miller Moss from USC. Miami, Carson Beck from Georgia. North Carolina gets Gio Lopez from South Alabama. Stanford, I don't know what the hell you want to do with them. I mean, they're all over the place. They did get Dylan Risk from UCF, who started a couple games in the spring portal. Syracuse is interesting because Fran Brown named Ricky Collins, the LSU transfer, the starter, and then they went out and got Steve Angeli from Notre Dame in the spring portal. Virginia gets Chandler Morris from North Texas, and Wake Forest goes with Robbie Ashford from South Carolina. So a lot of portal additions for the ACC. Which ones to you, Adam, are intriguing as we head into 2025?
Well, I mean, look, obviously there's two of them, right? Darian Mensa from Tulane going to Duke. You know, Malik Murphy was not really what I completely expected last year for the Blue Devils. But, I mean, the guy still had 26 passing touchdowns. He just didn't take good enough care of the football. He had the 12 interceptions and didn't really run around as much as I kind of expected him to. And Duke, I mean, they won 9 games last year. So this is a team that I think, you know, I think Mensa's a really good fit there. But, I mean, you can't talk about the ACC without talking about Miller Moss and what Jeff Brohm has been able to do with quarterbacks here in terms of getting those guys drafted, in terms of getting them noticed, in terms of, I mean, none of them are super high-end types of players. They're not going to be elite NFL quarterbacks by any means, but I think Miller Moss could be a really, really good one. And honestly, you look at their schedule for this upcoming season here. They do play on the road at Miami, but that's off of a bye. They play on the road at SMU right after playing Clemson. That's a tricky little spot for them. But I could very much make a case for Miller Moss at 50-1 to win the Heisman. I'm sure there's a better price out there. I just have DraftKings pulled up right now. But, I mean, Eastern Kentucky, James Madison, a James Madison team that was still good last year. But, I mean, back-to-back years of losing a ton of talent. Bowling Green in the non-conference. They, of course, play the rivalry game against Kentucky. Miller Moss has a chance to put up some good numbers early on and really kind of carry that through ACC play. And as we saw last year, the ACC simply wasn't very good. I think Miller Moss at 50-1 is an interesting price to keep in mind for the Heisman market.
Yeah, it's always telling too when you see a player, albeit a year removed, but a player that puts up big numbers against a team and then that team goes out and targets him. And you think back to the bowl game in which Miller Moss got the start a year plus ago, the Holiday Bowl, he lit up Louisville, and now Jeff Brohm handpicks Miller Moss to be his guy. So I totally agree with you. Look, the Carson Beck situation's fascinating. They're going to have an amazing offensive line on paper in front of him, but we just haven't seen a ton of Tommy John surgery returns, right? It's not the same type of throwing motion, a football versus a baseball. We hear Tommy John all the time in baseball, but I'm curious to see what we're going to see from Carson Beck. And, you know, I'm not out on Mike Norvell, and maybe he's a one hit wonder with the season, and Thomas Castellanos is kind of all over the place, but another type of situation where Boston College goes to FSU on that Monday night of Labor Day weekend. They get the win, and then Mike Norvell picks him as his guy. So I'm intrigued. I would say, though, to sum it up for me, of the transfers in the ACC that project to start, I'm with you. I think Miller Moss is the most intriguing there, knowing that you're falling into a system that is quarterback friendly with the head coach of Jeff Brohm and a guy that has certainly put up some big numbers before.
Do we really think Castellanos is going to keep that job at Florida State throughout the course of the season? I mean, I guess it's possible, and he's something of a dual threat type of guy. Maybe Norvell is going to feel a little bit more comfortable with that because, you know, most of his quarterbacks at Memphis were, you know, good passers, but they were also at least mobile enough to kind of move around and figure some things out. I mean, but he's a small guy at 5'11". They don't really have a whole lot of size at the quarterback position down there to begin with. I don't know. Florida State's going to be a hard team, I think, to evaluate because Castellanos at least has experience, has racked up some production, but I don't know that he's going to keep that job. So this is a really strange year for Florida State, I think.
The Big 12, at least from what I gathered, not too many transfer quarterbacks expected to start. Colorado, shocker, they went to the portal, and they got Caden Salter from Liberty. Connor Wegman is now the starter at Houston, or expected to be the starter. I texted noted Oklahoma State fan Brett McMurphy saying, who's going to be the starting quarterback in Stillwater? And I think I got the emoji of, I don't know. They added Banks Bowen from Tulsa during the spring portal, Haas Hegney from TCU.
What an elite name.
It is a good name. Very good name. And I have no idea what the Pokes are going to do, but when in doubt, I guess just trust Gundy. UCF, they've got a name that you've mentioned many a times on this podcast. They went out and they got Cam Fancher from FAU, but they also got Taven Jackson from Indiana. It seems like, from what I gathered, UCF is completely wide open with Scott Frost back there. And then to me, the clear-cut, most intriguing addition from a quarterback standpoint in the Big 12 is Devin Dampier from New Mexico. Not a big dude, but elite athletically. Made that New Mexico team very competitive a year ago. Had a chance to make a bowl game before they lost their finale on the island to Hawaii. So those were the five from the Big 12 that I noted. Devin Dampier for me, clear cut, most intriguing of those five. What about you?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. It's most definitely Dampier. And you know, look, I mean, I think what's going to be kind of interesting to sort of follow here with the Big 12 is, you know, as you said, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are entrenched here. And again, the exercise that we're going to have coming up after the break, talking about, you know, returning starting quarterbacks and how we kind of rank them. But the thing that's really fascinating about Dampier is his running ability, right? We think of the Big 12 as a lot of gunslingers, a lot of West Coast offense types of styles, you know, maybe borderline air raid, stuff like that. You don't get a lot of super dual threat guys. I mean, you know, Will Howard kind of ran around a little bit at Kansas State, and Avery Johnson did the same thing last year in his first year as a starter. But there really hasn't been anybody with, you know, 800, 900,000 yard upside that I can remember here recently in this conference. And so Utah, a team that's typically very, very strong in the trenches, very good at protecting the quarterback, good on the offensive line. Now, all of a sudden, you have a legitimate dual threat in Dampier, who's not the greatest passer by any means, 12 touchdowns, 12 interceptions last year. But that run dynamic, where the Big 12 is not a great defensive conference, I'm fascinated to see not only how this all plays out, but how Utah and their offensive coaching staff adjust and what the new playbook may look like.
Yeah, and you mentioned entrenched, and a number of these guys will be on our list, our rankings, but Kansas State and Arizona State per DraftKings co-favorites to win the conference. Avery Johnson for K-State back. Sam Levitt for ASU back. Barrett Morton is back at Texas Tech. Jake Retzlaff is back at BYU. Sawyer Robertson is back at Baylor. Hoover is back at TCU. Jaden Daniels is back at Kansas. Or Jalen Daniels, I beg your pardon, is back at Kansas. Iowa State's got Rocco back. So you look at the top portion of the Big 12 from an odds standpoint, and as you alluded to, a lot of returning starters there. All right, to the Big 10, Indiana goes out and they get a pretty big splash. Fernando Mendoza from Cal will be their starting quarterback. They targeted him very quickly in the portal. Iowa adds Gronsky, I believe it is, from South Dakota State. I'll get it right one of these days. A couple other interesting situations with Maryland and Michigan, where Maryland went out and got Justin Martin from UCLA, but I think there's a really good shot that he will be replaced by Malik Washington, who is the number five quarterback per 247 Sports. And then Michigan, they went and got Mikey Keene, but let's be honest, Bryce Underwood, if not day one, will be the starter. It feels like eventually they're in Ann Arbor. Northwestern went to SMU. They got Preston Stone. Purdue, interesting situation here. Ryan Brown transferred to UNC, but Barry Odom was able to lure him back. So it feels like Ryan Brown will probably be the starter for Purdue. Malachi Singleton they added from Arkansas. Evans Chuba, I believe, or is it Chuba Evans? I might have flipped that name from Washington State. Billy Edwards Jr. goes to Wisconsin from Maryland. And then Nico Iamaleava, UCLA from Tennessee. So nothing too splashy, I would say. Maybe Fernando Mendoza, the most intriguing from Indiana, or goes to Indiana from Cal. And then obviously we'll see what Nico brings to the table, as he very infamously left Tennessee and he ends up at UCLA.
So I think that I was probably a year early on Northwestern and kind of expecting them to really take a step forward here. I think they have the opportunity to do that now, because they definitely very, very clearly upgraded at the quarterback position. And I liked the hire of offensive coordinator Zach Lujan, who came over from South Dakota State, you know, where he was the OC and the quarterbacks coach. We know that defensively they're going to be pretty solid, especially with David Braun. Preston Stone, I mean, really good until injuries wound up kind of tripping him up. And then, of course, you know, Kevin Jennings takes over the team and, you know, they wind up making it, you know, into the college football playoff. But I think Preston Stone is a really, really nice addition for this Northwestern team. I haven't done too much of my homework in terms of looking at season win totals and all of that, but I think that Northwestern is a team that defensively will be solid. You know, they'll be able to keep themselves in games, but man, Preston Stone's the best quarterback that they've had there in a very long time. I think this is a team that could be a little bit of a surprise, and definitely a team that I could see getting bowl eligible here for this season.
Quick note on Iowa. I did get a tweet asking about maybe Hank Brown, the transfer from Auburn. From my understanding, and I could be wrong, I think it's going to be the South Dakota State kid who's his job to lose, but they did add Hank Brown as well, who made a handful of starts for Auburn. All right, to the SEC. Once again, nothing too splashy. I guess Oklahoma, probably the biggest splash. Auburn, they went out, and their quarterback room is going to be fascinating to me. So they get Jackson Arnold from Oklahoma. They get Ashton Daniels from Stanford. And then they were also able to lure in five-star recruit Deuce Knight, who is a true freshman. So it seems like Jackson Arnold will be the starter. Maybe Ashton Daniels is in some packages there. But Auburn with Hugh Freeze in a make-or-break type of season, they've got a pretty big-time quarterback room. We'll see how it plays out. The return of Zach Calzada. He's back from once upon a time beating Alabama at Texas A&M. Did a hiatus in the FCS ranks where he put up ungodly numbers at Incarnate Word. From my understanding, if you play quarterback at Incarnate Word, you might have a chance to be the number one overall pick. So Zach Calzada, he goes to Kentucky. Mississippi State, it seems like it will be Blake Shapen who will keep the starting job there, but they did go out and get Luke Kromenhoek from Florida State. Bo Prabula, expected to be the guy at Missouri. He comes in from Penn State. As mentioned, John Mateer from Washington State goes to Oklahoma. And then the trade of quarterbacks, as Joey Aguilar from App State to UCLA for the spring, he is now at Tennessee. So once again, you're looking at an SEC, no Georgia, no Alabama on this list. From my count, six transfers expected to start. Actually, five if you remove Mississippi State. So not that big of a list for the SEC when it comes to the transfer portal at the quarterback position.
So, I mean, obviously the most interesting one is Auburn, you know, with Jackson Arnold. I mean, I think that's one that definitely stands out a little bit. And, you know, we'll see what he's able to do there. Obviously was able to start, you know, in a little bit of a limited capacity there at Oklahoma before he wound up transferring. One other name that you didn't mention, and this is one that, you know, I'm not sure I understand, really. You know, there's a lot of buzz around the South Carolina program. They increased the salaries for all of their assistant coaches, both coordinators, defensive coordinator Clayton White, now the highest paid assistant in program history. But, you know, they have Lenora Sellers, right, who we'll talk about here shortly.
Yep.
But they also brought in Aaron Noland from Ohio State. And there was, you know, a thought before Will Howard came in that maybe Aaron Noland would start for the Buckeyes last year. And they wound up going the transfer portal route. They're not going to do that this year. They're going to go with Julian Sain. But I find it interesting that a guy like Noland, a four-star type of guy, a guy that had a ton of buzz coming out of high school, goes to South Carolina where it's pretty clear that he's not going to start this year. So I don't know what that's all about. I mean, I know money talks in college football right now, but like, is South Carolina really giving up significant resources for a backup quarterback? That's one that's kind of interesting to me, where Sellers obviously is a bowling ball of a quarterback as a runner. He's not a very good passer. So I'm just intrigued by kind of that whole situation.
And I'll say this too. We'll have to check in with some Tennessee folks. I don't think Joey Aguilar is just going to be handed that job. Jake Merklinger was a big-time recruit coming out of the high school ranks. He was on the roster a year ago. So we'll see how it plays out. But I don't know if they're just ready to hand the keys to the App State transfer here. And then John Mateer, obviously this is a guy that, you know, made the transition from Washington State down to Oklahoma. He's following his offensive coordinator there to OU. It feels like it's a make or break year in Norman. He had some gaudy numbers, but I don't, and you know, spoiler alert, when we get to our list here on the other side of the break of top 12 quarterbacks, I didn't put John Mateer in it. I could look like a moron and wouldn't be the first time, but you got to prove it to me, man. And you know, you played a Mountain West schedule, and I know I'm going to be a bit hypocritical because I'm going to have Devin Dampier on it, but I'm not going to have John Mateer. But you're going into the SEC. You put up some really big numbers a year ago. You ran for over 800 yards, but it's a whole new ball game you're walking into in the SEC as opposed to playing a, you know, de facto Mountain West schedule just a year ago. So John Mateer put up some big numbers, and he was a lot of fun to watch. But you know, this is a team in Washington State that down the stretch lost to New Mexico, lost to Wyoming in their regular season finale. So I think it's intriguing, but I'm not fully handing over John Mateer Heisman futures at this point.
Well, and look, I mean, this doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? I mean, we saw Cam Ward go number one, and you know, he was playing at Incarnate Word, but the programs that recruited John Mateer, who's a Texas native from Little Elm, Washington State, where he wound up going, Central Arkansas, Columbia, Houston Christian, Incarnate Word, and New Mexico State. So this is a guy that Big 12 and SEC teams, you know, were recruiting around at some point, right? You know, I don't know where Little Elm, Texas is, but I'm sure there was some player somewhere in that area that they were looking at. And, you know, he didn't really have the high pedigree coming out of high school. And yeah, he went to Washington State and, you know, again, I mean, he had a monster year, 44 total touchdowns. But like you said, that was against a Mountain West schedule. And, you know, he wasn't great against Boise State, threw for 327, but 20 carries for 28 yards, kind of running for his life a little bit. Did have that win over Texas Tech where he ran for 197 yards, a season high. So maybe that's something that kind of stood out a little bit. But, you know, I mean, again, it's the wrong time to kind of put that knock on somebody given how Cam Ward's, you know, college football career kind of progressed. But still, to your point, I agree. I mean, you've got to prove it to me. And Oklahoma's a place where, yeah, and you have very, very high expectations, especially, like you said, in what could be a year where some people's jobs are on the lines. So we'll see. I mean, I understand why he's highly touted. The production was very impressive. But yeah, I got to see it at a place like Oklahoma before I'm really going to buy in.
And then look, I get the ties, right? Ben Arbuckle, you know, boy genius goes to Washington State. They have this success. They come together, package deal. You know, week two, we'll find out a lot. You've got a loaded defense, as it always is with Michigan. That's going to be a big time primetime game there. So we will see. So we've done a little foreshadowing, but I did want to run through that exercise. If we missed anyone, let us know. You can always tweet us. I'm at one Tim Murray and Adam is at Skating Tripods. All right. On the other side of the break, we'll run through a little exercise. Our top 12 quarterbacks returning in 2025. And doing this exercise, I thought it would be challenging. It was, but I found myself leaving off some pretty notable names, and we'll discuss that on the other side. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Just a reminder, as you're listening to this, and maybe you're listening to this post-Kentucky Derby, but I want to give the floor to Adam Burke here, who has been working hard on our Kentucky Derby guide. What offerings do we have, sir, over at VSiN.com so folks can get their hands on the Kentucky Derby guide?
Well, now's a good time, if you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber, to become one. First of all, you'll get the Kentucky Derby betting guide, which, you know, 15 pages there from our experts, some cameos from our friends over at First Bet as well. Preview of the Kentucky Oaks, some stuff on the pace for the upcoming Kentucky Derby, expert picks as well. A lot of good stuff in that guide. But also right now, over at vsin.com/subscribe, 14 months of access for our VSiN Pro subscription for $199 with the promo code PRO. So usually an annual subscription is $240, $20 a month. But right now we're giving it to you for $199 and 2 free months. So that will include our NFL betting guide July 1st, college football betting guide, likely August 5th, I believe, for that one, either August 5th or August 7th, NBA, NHL betting guides as well. You know, I mean, over a year, right? Going to take you through the Super Bowl, through next year's March Madness, through the college football playoff, all of that. So VSiN.com/subscribe, the place to go right now and jump on that 14 months for the price of 12 offer.
And I would say this, Mother's Day right around the corner, perfect Mother's Day gift, right? I
mean, absolutely.
I mean, I think that would be the perfect gift for the mom in your life. All right, let's get to our rankings. We didn't give each other our full rankings. I've already done this on VSiN Primetime, as well as the weekend morning line, which, by the way, you can catch from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and Sunday, my solo expedition throughout the summer months. But there were a couple of names, unique names, and one of the names that I didn't even have an honorable mention that you're going to get to that I think is a really good one to note. I want to hit on a couple names that are not in our top 12s, and I'll start. Mentioned him already, John Mateer, not in my top 12. Intrigued, but just couldn't put him in there. Kevin Jennings, not in my top 12, the quarterback from SMU. Avery Johnson, the quarterback from Kansas State. I remember sitting in the Circus Sportsbook last summer, and when Big 12 Media Days were in town, man, there was a lot of buzz, a lot of excitement around Avery Johnson, and it was an okay season, but kind of underwhelming. Jake Retzlaff from BYU, I don't have on my list. And then lastly, I'll say this because it's returning. I don't have Julian Sayin, who very well could win a national championship this year with the talent that's on the Ohio State roster. I don't have Dante Moore. You expect Oregon still to be very, very good this year. I don't have Gunnar Stockton, the projected starter quarterback of Georgia. I don't have Austin Simmons, the projected quarterback of Ole Miss, CJ Carr, Notre Dame. I mean, there's a lot of big-time programs, Adam, that have massive question marks at quarterback. Now, they could hit. I think Dante Moore could have a great year, and there's a reason Julian Sayin's Heisman odds are as low as they are because you're the quarterback of Ohio State, but there's a lot of big-time programs that are having unproven guys being handed the keys to the car.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just, you know, kind of what we can expect here, I think, the rest of the way, you know, in college football, is that you're going to have some teams that go the portal route, some teams that are going to kind of protect their assets and sort of, you know, look, if they have a high recruit like, you know, a Michigan, I mean, obviously they paid Bryce Underwood a ton of money. But, you know, if you have a high recruit, a Julian Sain type, a Dante Moore type, like, you spend money on other positions, right? You kind of do what a lot of these NFL teams have been doing. And again, you now have that GM-like front office in college football where it's like, you know what? Our quarterback is maybe average, maybe a little bit above average, but let's give him a damn good running back. Let's give him two great wide receivers, a good tight end. Let's build up the offensive line. You know, you can definitely elevate the performance of a quarterback by elevating the other parts of your roster. So I think there's something that, you know, that's something that we could see going forward where it's like, you know, you get somebody like Nico Iamaleava and it's like, okay, well, Tennessee paid him a ton of money to go there and he wasn't there very long. And then he goes into free agency and like everyone's gun shy to pay him. And he winds up going to UCLA where taxes are going to eat the hell out of the money that he got. Like, I get that it's, you know, free agency in college football right now, but I think teams are going to smarten up to this whole thing with quarterbacks and maybe build from some less volatile positions with their NIL budgets.
Yeah, I think there's no, I mean, you're seeing teams take people from the NFL to run their, you know, GM positions. Case in point, our former colleague at VSiN, Michael Lombardi, is now the general manager of North Carolina. Obviously, there's some interesting situations brewing down there that we don't need to get into, but Notre Dame went out to the NFL ranks to get their new general manager. So it's a new world that we're walking into. And for Nico and his camp, it was, you know, a situation where it felt like every player was getting this massive payday, and ultimately they played the wrong hand. So Nico also not on my list. Dylan Raiola, not on my list. Maybe he takes a big jump at Nebraska. Who are a couple guys that you ultimately left off the list? Who are some honorable mention guys before we get into our rankings?
Well, so I think King of the Upset, Diego Pavia, is somebody that I didn't put in my top 12.
Oh, I got him in there, baby.
I mean, I know you're a big, well, first of all, you're a big underdog guy. Second of all, you're a big Diego Pavia guy. It's just hard. The resources at Vanderbilt to be able to replicate, you know, what they did last season, I think is really, really tough. Also, bro, like, get on LinkedIn and, you know, go into the workforce. Like, you don't need to play 12 years of college football. Kevin Jennings is somebody I did not put in my top 12 at SMU. Maybe a little bit of recency bias because, my God, he looked bad in the playoff. But, you know, a guy that I'm curious to see what happens now that their roster's been picked apart a little bit. You know, when you are a team that, you know, makes a run as a, you know, kind of low major conference team or as a mid-major type of team, you're going to get pillaged. That's just the way that it's going to go now in the college football landscape. And also they lost some guys' graduation as well. Brendan Sorsby for Cincinnati is one that I think could take a bit of a step forward. I mean, I thought he played well, particularly in the second part of the season. Cincinnati is just kind of, they're not on the level of the other Big 12 teams. So I think it's a little bit difficult for him. DJ Lagway, I have absolutely no idea what you're going to get out of him. So I did not put him in my top 12. And the other one, I don't know if you have him in the honorable mention or not, but a guy that had a true, legitimate, you know, throwaway type of season last year is Kyren Drones. You know,
I have him in my 12. You know, it's funny. Once again, and I wanted to do this exercise this early because while on paper it looks like it's an underwhelming quarterback class, the more you dig into it, the depth that is out there. I mean, Kyren Drones is a guy that I put a long shot future bet on a year ago to win the Heisman Trophy, and you pointed it out, underwhelming season. How about Luke Altmaier? I don't have him in my top 12.
He was a late cut for me, but he was, I considered it.
Noah Fifita, a guy that I think had a bit of a throwaway season, underwhelming last year, and you lose Tet McMillan. How is that going to look? Look, I don't have Darian Mensah in my top 12, and you know, a couple folks reached out and said that they have him very high heading into this year. So I think as you go down the list, it is kind of interesting. Like Aiden Childs was a five-star recruit, and he's going to be the guy at Michigan State, you know, in year two there, you know, for that new era in East Lansing. So the depth of the quarterbacks, I think, is going to be pretty interesting. I don't have Rocco Becht. I know you do, but I don't have Rocco Becht in my top 12. So I think there's a lot of interesting angles to look at here. So, and you know, Brendan Sorsby, as you alluded to, wasn't even a guy that I had on my honorable mention either. So,
I mean, look, another guy that I was just thinking about, we had the ACC conversation earlier. I mean, he did not play well at all late in the year, but Eli Holstein was pretty good for Pitt early on in the season. You know what I mean? He's a guy that finished with a 17-7 touchdown interception ratio. I do want to preface our discussion by saying this. I took your request for a top 12 list very literally. So I only have returning quarterbacks that are returning to the same team as the starter. So I don't have like a guy like John Mateer in there because he's a transfer guy, or, you know, Nico or any of those guys. Like, I've only got players that stayed with their programs in my top 12. So if there's somebody out there that's a transfer guy and you're like, how the hell can you not include him? Well, it's because it's the same team with the starting quarterback is what I'm going for here.
Well, and here's the thing. Let's get into it. My list of 12 quarterbacks, there's only one transfer, and it's number 12, and it's Devin Dampier. Transfer from New Mexico to Utah. I think this was a home run addition for Utah. So I'll run through 12 through 9, and you can hit me with yours. So 12, Devin Dampier, Utah. 11, the under god, Diego Pavia. Am I doing it kind of tongue-in-cheek a little bit? Oh, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I love the dude. He's 100 years old. He's played college football for like a decade. Sawyer Robertson, I might have low. I have him 10th at Baylor. He could have a big year. And you look around at, you know, folks that I respect their opinion. I think Bud Elliott had him really high in his rankings. So I have him 10. And then number 9 is Haynes King. When healthy, this dude is a legit stud at the quarterback position in college. Now, is he going to project to the NFL? No, he's not a great thrower. But look, you saw it, man. When he's healthy, that Georgia Tech team was a live dog, and he's back for another year. So 12 through 9 for me, Dampier, Utah, Pavia, Vandy, Robertson, Baylor, and King, Georgia Tech, up 12 through 9.
Yeah, I didn't even think about Haynes King.
That goes to the depth. I know I'm a broken record here, but there's a lot of dudes. Like, I didn't even think about Jalen Daniels. What, 2 years ago, we were drooling over Jalen Daniels at Kansas, and he's back for another year.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you can group a lot of these guys in similar buckets, right? I mean, this is a very subjective exercise that we're doing here where a lot of these guys probably project out relatively similarly, right? Like, you know, they're going to have 25 plus touchdowns, 8 or 9 interceptions, something like that, throw for anywhere from 2,500 to 3,500 yards, you know, all that type of thing. So, I mean, a lot of these guys, like the differences between them are not particularly big. So I think that's part of the reason why, you know, this exercise is not only interesting, but also why there will be a little bit of variance. There will be some guys that we kind of prefer over others. As far as my 12 through 9 go, 12, I got Marcel Reed from Texas A&M. You know, dual threat-ish type of dude, 22 total touchdowns last year. Excited about the idea of, you know, him being in a situation where, you know, he'll play for Colin Klein again in year 2. And maybe that's something that kind of elevates his profile a little bit. Damon Williams is 11 for me, and a lot of people are going to bitch and complain and say this is too low, but I mean, the guy took 15 sacks in the last two games that he played. Oregon sacked him 10 times, in that final game there, the regular season. I just need more sample size, right? I mean, obviously the stats are there, 78% completion rate, 10 total touchdowns, wasn't the full-time starter. Also, he's a 5'11 dude who wants to run a little bit. Like, how durable is he going to be, I think, is a fair question. 10, Sam Levitt, Arizona State. True, legitimate game manager type of guy. I'm curious to see what he does without Cam Scataboo, but I have to give him a lot of credit. And also, Kenny Dillingham's a hell of a guy to learn from, you know, former OC, now head coach. So Levitt's 10 for me. And then Lenora Sellers is number 9. You know, he's not a good thrower, just not a good thrower, but he's a phenomenal runner and he's a brutal dude to try to tackle. But I am curious to see how things go. Dowell Loggins, now a head coach. I can't remember where. Charlotte or something like that, maybe. But Mike Shula, the new OC, so he's going to have to learn a little bit different of an offense, even though Shula just simply got promoted from within.
So 8 for me is Damon Williams. And when I did this exercise about a month ago on the weekend morning line, I left Damon Williams off. So I went back and I'm like, all right, let me add him to the list. And to your point, a lot of upside there at Washington. And, you know, when you think back to Jed Fish and the year that Noah Fifita had under Fish, and then maybe the regression we saw when Brent Brennan came to town, I think there's a lot of excitement, but there's a lot of unproven aspects to that. But we saw a glimpse of it. 7's Arch Manning. And I get it. I got a couple of tweets when I put this list out there. Oh, way to clickbait and put Arch Manning low. How do we know what Arch Manning is? Look, he projects to be a stud, very well could be the number one overall pick, could win a national championship this year. Andy Staples put out his post-spring top 25. He's got Texas 1. I'm not going to argue with Andy Staples' top 25. And Arch Manning projects to be a superstar, but he projects to it, right? Once again, Dante Moore, not on my list. CJ Carr, not on my list. Julian Sain, not on my list. We don't know what a lot of those guys are. So I put Manning at 7. I thought that was fair. Lenore Sellers, I put him at 6. A lot of excitement there. We saw glimpses of it, but you certainly get a bit concerned. You need the consistency. And I put Drew Aller 5. Look, to your point about Kevin Jennings, the recency bias, look, I was there at the Orange Bowl. That pass that ended the game, essentially, for Penn State was atrocious. Should have never been thrown by Drew Aller, but you know, he's going to have all the weapons. He's going to have a good offensive line in front of him. Tyler Warren is gone. That was his binky, right? You think back to the Orange Bowl, he completed 0 passes to wide receivers. Now, it's maybe an indictment of the wide receiver room at Penn State as opposed to Drew Aller. But Aller 5 for me, maybe a little bit low. But Damon Williams, Arch Manning, Sellers, and Drew Aller, 8-5 for me.
So Tyler Warren had 35.6% of the catches for Penn State last year, and he had about a third of their receiving yardage. So, yeah, I'm curious to see about Drew Aller, who I will get to in this section, by the way. 8-5 for me. I'm going to go Josh Hoover from TCU.
Not on my list.
42 touchdowns over a season and a half as a starter. And I actually saw this when doing a little bit of research here. Tennessee tried to court him after Nico was leaving, and he was like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to stay at TCU. So buying into the program is something that I definitely like. So Hoover is on my list there at 8. Avery Johnson is 7 for me. And again, while last season was pretty underwhelming, it was his first year as a full-time starter. You know, they had some turnover on the offensive coaching staff as well. Still had over 3,300 total yards, 32 touchdowns, over 600 rushing yards. I still think he can be a really, really good player for that team. So Hoover and Johnson, couple Big 12 guys, 8-7. Blake Horvath is number 6 for me.
Ooh, I like it.
The Navy quarterback, beaten up at the end of last year. I mean, he was like barely walking, it felt like, through some of those games late in the year. He's already tied for 12th in passing touchdowns for Navy in just 16 games. He had 6 games of 115 plus on the ground, 2 games of 200 plus, 30 total touchdowns, and now he's in his second season where Navy really revamped the offense quite a bit last year, added some pistol concepts, added some wing T type stuff, you know, all these different things to go along with that triple option that they're used to running. It was kind of a Frankenstein offense, and now he's a second year into the playbook, and we know how disciplined Service Academy kids are. I think Horvath is going to have a monster season for Navy. And then finally at 5 is Drew Aller. I don't get the hype. I still don't think the wide receiver room is very good. The running backs make this offense go. And now he doesn't have Tyler Warren. And like maybe Andy Kotelnicki in year 2, maybe things go a little bit better. But man, you get all these draft guys salivating over Drew Aller. I don't know if it's a size thing. I don't know if it's an arm strength thing. I don't see it. And more importantly, I don't see it when they play somebody good. So Aller's 5 almost on reputation here, but frankly, I think some of the guys that I had below him, I could put above him and feel comfortable about it.
Yeah, I think it was very alarming, the Notre Dame game. And I get it. Notre Dame's got good corners, got good safety play. Xavier Watts was a 3rd-round pick, but that was alarming to me. I love your Blake Horvath. I'm mad at myself for not having him on my list. Look, knowing that program as well as I have, You think about some of the names when they come back for another year, whether it be Keenan Reynolds, one of the all-time greats at Navy, top five in Heisman. Malcolm Perry, I think, vastly underrated for what he did his final season, ran for over 2,000 yards. And I think the point you made is that Blake Horvath can spin it a little bit for a Navy quarterback, that is. You know, they'll throw the ball. He threw for 1,300 yards a year ago, and he dealt with some injuries, you know, as the year went on. But yeah, I think that could be a fun one. It was exciting for me to see Navy bounce back a year ago. 10 wins, won their bowl game against Oklahoma. That was a team that was one undefeated going into the Notre Dame game. So yeah, that's a good one. I did not have them on my list. And once again, I know I'm a broken record. Speaks to the depth of this quarterback class this year. May not be star-studded, but I think it is, from a depth standpoint, very intriguing. All right, 4 through 1. And I think you and I, you already mentioned two of these guys. You got Sam Leavitt from Arizona State. I think your point is very fair. What is Sam Leavitt going to look like without Cam Scataboo? I don't know. But I do think Kenny Dillingham, being his head coach, back for another year. There were a couple moments down the stretch. I think it was the Big 12 championship against Iowa State that really kind of opened my eyes. Be like, all right, maybe this dude does have a little something extra inside of him. And it's not just Cam Scataboo. Garrett Nussmeier, number 3. A lot of hype, right? You look at some of these way too early mock drafts. They've got him. Some people have him going number 1. Got to show it to me, but we've seen glimpses of it. I think the potential is there. I will put Nussmeier 3. DJ Lagway, to me, is a very high upside guy. I mentioned his name before, but Bud Elliott, I think, put DJ Lagway 1. He's dealing with a little bit of a, I think it's a shoulder injury right now in the offseason, but I think he's been cleared to throw. And then last one, I thought this was easy. Cade Klubnik 1. I think he's the best returning quarterback with the weapons around him. I fully anticipate Clemson to make a run to the playoff. They win the ACC this year. I will probably at some point add a ACC future on Clemson, maybe a Cade Klubnik Heisman. I think they've got the weapons and another year in that Riley system. I really like Clemson this year. I thought they started to figure it out a little bit down the stretch, and I know we've been waiting for it for a while. But I think this is the year you see big returns from Cade Klubnik. I thought he had a good playoff, and I think he's the best quarterback coming back from a returning standpoint.
So number 4 for me is going to be Sawyer Robertson from Baylor. Mm-hmm. I'm really expecting this kid to take a big leap. Remember, I mean, he was originally recruited to Mississippi State before the passing of Mike Leach. So Leach was expecting this kid to be his guy of the future in that air raid type of offense. Transfers out after Leach passes and, you know, was a part-time starter for Baylor in 2023, threw for over 3,000 yards last year, 28-8 touchdown interception ratio, only took 15 sacks. He's mobile enough to evade the rush. Had a couple of big rushing games too, 82 yards against Colorado, 73 against Oklahoma State. I really like him. 4-star kid coming out of Lubbock when he was in high school. I like him quite a bit. Rocco Becht is number 3 for me. Look, man, I mean, there's obviously people are going to draw the easy comp to Brock Purdy, and there's probably a lot of him, you know, in there. But 2-year starter already, 48-17 touchdown interception ratio, over 300 yards on the ground, nothing super impressive. But the dude just takes care of the football, makes smart decisions, makes that Iowa State offense run. I like him quite a bit. I will say this is kind of 1A and 1B sort of here with Garrett Nussmeier and Cade Klubnik. I'll say Nussmeier is my 1B. I mean, one of 6 guys who threw for over 4,000 yards last year, didn't get sacked a ton, threw a few interceptions, kind of is what it is. LSU wasn't, you know, they didn't live up to some of the expectations that they had. But I think Nussmeier is kind of the 1B for me. And Klubnik is my 1A, not just because of all the experience that he has, 7-1 touchdown interception ratio in the college football playoff as well. But you look at his wide receivers from last year, Antonio Williams, 904 yards, a sophomore, kind of a third-year sophomore. Bryant Wesco, basically playing as a true freshman. TJ Moore, playing as a true freshman. Like, and those guys were super impressive. They've got good size at the wide receiver position. Klubnik has the chance to have a mammoth season this year. and probably move himself up some draft boards as well. So I think he is the top returning guy, and it's not just because of him. It's because he's getting to grow up with all these young receivers around him who are just remarkably talented.
Yeah, the Rocco Becht one, I left him off my list. Probably should have had him on the top 12. We mentioned Drew Aller and not having Tyler Warren. No Jalen Noel, no Jaden Higgins. 167 receptions between the two of them and almost 2,400 yards receiving, 17 touchdowns. So Rocco Becht, from a returning standpoint, probably should have had him in my top 12, but very curious to see how they replace two studs who, ironically enough, both ended up with the Houston Texans. So kind of cool that Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins end up on this same NFL roster. Worth noting here, did I miss it? You did not have Arch Manning on your list, correct?
Well, I didn't really consider Manning returning to the same team as a starter because it was Quinn Ewers' team. So based on my interpretation of what you sent me, I left Arch off, but I mean, obviously he would be in the top 12, probably somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, just because I got to see it. I got to see it. And, I don't know how long it'll take him to kind of show it to us. But if we were to run this list back for next season, he's probably going to end up being number one on it in all likelihood.
So the point I was going to make here is I put him at 7, and I'm with you. I got to see it. I think there's a good chance he'll be one, could win the Heisman Trophy. Maybe he'll be the number one overall pick. I think ultimately, from everything you kind of gather, read the tea leaves, that the plan is for him to return in 27, but we will see. But the point I want to make here to wrap up is I just looked at Andy Staples from On Three, his top 8 post spring: Texas, Notre Dame, Clemson, Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon, Alabama, Georgia. We consensus had 2 quarterbacks from those 8 on our list. Now, there's potential, obviously, with Arch Manning, with Julian Sayin, with Dante Moore, with CJ Carr, with Ty Simpson, with Gunnar Stockton. But think about that, Adam. As we head into this year, I think there's a lot of good quarterbacks, and we just ran through a list. I think our honorable mentions are pretty impressive, whether it be Kevin Jennings, a playoff quarterback. For me, Avery Johnson, you had him in your top 12. A guy that I bet a Heisman future on a year ago, and Nico, not in either one of our top 12s. Dylan Raiola, once upon a time, a 5-star recruit. He's back for another year at Nebraska. It's a lengthy list, and 6 of the top 8 teams in the eyes of Andy Staples do not have a top 12 or honorable mention returning quarterback. So there's a lot of kind of uncertainty heading into this year. And as we dive into the summer months, I think that's what's going to make it so fun from a take, in air quotes, standpoint and a betting standpoint, because I think there's just a lot of intrigue heading into this year, at least from the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I mean, you look at a conference like the Big 12, for example, right? I mean, Arizona State wins it. 4 teams go 7-2 in conference play, and some of the returning quarterbacks that, we've both mentioned, whether it's honorable mention or on our list. I mean, Baylor and TCU were 2 teams that went 6-3. They were a game away from potentially being, that team to make the Big 12. And make the college football playoff from the Big 12 as the champion. It would have depended on tiebreakers and all of that. But I mean, if Sawyer Robinson does make a leap, like, you got to look at Baylor, as a team that could potentially win that conference. If Josh Hoover is the real deal, I mean, TCU, they only gave up 320 points last year, only 224 in conference play. They were pretty good on that side of the ball, 1-4 in a row to finish out the season. Like, maybe TCU is a team that kind of sneaks in there. So, I think it's one of those things where you start looking at this from a how wide open is the conference standpoint. I think the Big 12 is definitely one of them. And then for the SEC, I mean, Tennessee's kind of going through a little bit of a retooling. Of course, they lost Dylan Sampson as well, who goes to the NFL. Alabama, like, does Kalen DeBoer get this thing figured out quickly? I don't know. Georgia, I mean, at some point, like, the loss of talent over and over and over again has to mean something, right? So, you start looking at some of these conferences and start thinking about who could be the teams in that playoff. And maybe there are some not long shots, but maybe some medium shots that get pretty attractive as a result.
And it feels like another offseason of the Big 12 being the most wide open conference. Right now, looking at DraftKings board, the co-favorites, Kansas State and Arizona State, are 5-1. In comparison, Clemson's the favorite in the ACC at plus 160. Ohio State's the favorite in the Big Ten at plus 190. And in the SEC, Texas is the favorite at plus 280. So the odds are telling you, once again, buckle up for the Big 12 because it's going to be wide open. You know, K-State, Arizona State, Texas Tech, BYU, Baylor, Utah, TCU, Kansas, Iowa State, they're all 14-1 or shorter. I just rattled off nine teams. Colorado is going to be overinflated. I think they might be a disaster this year based off of what they need in the portal. But yeah, I think the Big 12, buckle up. It's going to be another wide open, unexpected year there in the Big 12. And, you know, I'm fired up to get it going, man. You know, it was fun doing this exercise. I think we have an email address. I will try to figure that out for all of you. But if you want to do this exercise at home, you could tweet us at one Tim Murray at Skating Tripods, and you could yell at us and tell us how stupid we were for leaving this quarterback off or ranking this quarterback where we did. But I think it's a fun exercise because I didn't even think of Blake Horvath from Navy, and I'm kicking myself because I thought that was a great piece to put in your top 12, Adam. So I'm fired up, man, to get this bumping back and rolling here.
Yeah, me too. Definitely good to be talking some college football. And again, just realizing how much catch up I have to do here. You know, before that college football betting guide comes out the first full week of August over at vsin.com.
All right. We will hopefully be men of our word. I know you've got a big trip planned at some point here in the near future, but hopefully we will have a podcast in your feed as we did last summer. We'll have some great guests on. If you have any recommendations, you want to shoot me a tweet, that's fine too. But I would imagine a lot of the same folks we had on last summer, maybe a couple new ads as well. Some of the better college football gambling minds all throughout the summer months. But for Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We're back up and running for the summer months, getting you ready for a 2025 college football season. This has been the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.